Sis Grace, sengobambe ntambo. Are we ready to start?
My chicken hear me.
Maybe Sis Grace. Is Sis Grace on the platform?
I'm just going to follow up with her tree. I'm just going to follow
up with her Sis Grace called me now. She said she will log in now shortly. She's just struggling.
Oh.
Okay. Member Bartlett is in the waiting room. They can admit her.
Oh, okay. Can you please admit her? She's an alternate for Honorable Muimang. Committee Secretary?
So, G, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you.
Yes, Daftan Sochi.
Honorable Bartlett, Martha Bartlett. This is the alternate for Honorable Muimang.
Gee, I don't see a Bartlett. I just see a Miss Kay. Is that, I don't see a Bartlett in the waiting room.
Sure, I'm struggling too, yes. Can you ask can
you hear me?
Yes,
we only saw Miss Kay and I've accepted her, but now Miss Bartlett.
Miss Kay, can you please identify yourself?
Hi, I'm from the Department of Trade and Industry and Competition. With the ambassador. Thank you.
All right, thank you so much. Honorable Django, can you follow up with her in the meantime?
I'm following up with her now.
Yeah, okay. Let's formally open the meeting and welcome again, honorable members. I know we've been together this morning, considering the company's amendment bill. I don't know, there's somebody who's mic is on. From your side, the Honorable Dango, I think your mic is on. This afternoon, Honorable Members, we will be considering the WTO fisheries subsidies. The presentation that will be done, I'm told that Ambassador Mlumi Peter is with us together with Ms. Kay. So they will be presenting. I think there are also other officials from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. By way of introduction and background, honorable members, you will remember that in 2022, I think towards the end, so around November, we received a briefing from the Department of Trade, Industry and Competition. I think at the time, the DDG Ambassador Xavier was giving us a presentation on the South Africa's trade portfolio, dealing with all the areas that unit is dealing with, the issues around the African Economic Integration, SACU, SADC, African African Continental Free Trade Area, the SADC, EU, EPA, SACU plus M, UK EPA, I think SACU plus Mozambique, AGOA, World Trade Organization, as well as the functional policy mandate of the Trade Policy Branch, highlights of South African trade policy, South African trade performance. That presentation was done on the 29th of November. So it touched all these areas. Then with regard to the WTO, we got a report or a presentation on the WTO and the MC12 outcomes, the issues of the waiver of patent protection under TRIPS, the fisheries agreement, the issue of the minimal rules on export restriction to address food insecurity, the extension of the e-commerce moratorium and e-commerce work program, and the commitment to WTO reform on the issues of fisheries subsidies agreement. It was said that the agreement was seeking to protect the environment, fulfill the mandate in the SDG 14.6, prohibit WTO members from providing subsidies to vessels or operators engaged in illegal, unreported, unregulated fishing and fishing of overfished stock, unless they aim to rebuild stocks to sustainable levels, and fishing in unregulated high seas. It was also indicated that 2/3 of membership must ratify the agreement to bring it into force. So basically, this meeting, honorable members, is about that, about ratifying so that we become part of the 2/3 of membership that would have ratified this agreement so that it comes into force. At this stage, I will then hand over to Honorable Ambassador Lundi Peter. Over to you, DDT.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and good afternoon to all the members.
Are you able to switch on your video?
Yes, I can. The only challenge is that I'm unable to share the screen for the presentation.
Recording in progress.
I think Mr. Bazia Otsulu will assist you there.
Okay.
Okay. Can see you.
Okay, yeah, well, thank you, Chair. Thank you very much, Chair.
You come back to South Africa.
Thank you very much, Chair. It's good to be home.
Yeah.
Then I'll ask assistance to then move through the presentation. As you rightly indicated, Honorable Chair, the purpose is to take the members through the phase one of the fisheries agreement. And this is an agreement that has been concluded during the 12th ministerial conference, as you have indicated. And the aim is to take it through the ratification processes as recommended by Cabinet. In terms of the presentation, I will outline the benefits of the agreement, also take the members through the fisheries subsidies agreement and its provisions, also touch on why we need to ratify the implementation plan, the risk and risk mitigation, including the financial implications of the agreement, but also what the benefits are for vulnerable groups and the broader society. And also lastly, the consultations that we have undertaken towards the conclusion of the agreement. Next slide, please. In terms of the benefits, implementing the agreement and also ratification of the agreement will contribute to the medium-term strategic framework of 2019 to 2024 towards a better Africa world and reducing fishing pressure on global fish stocks. It will also assist us to meet the United Nations Sustainable Development Goal 14.6, which indicates that we need to prohibit certain forms of fishery subsidies which contribute to overcapacity and overfishing, as well as those that contribute to illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing. Also important, it will assist in terms of meeting South Africa's National Development Plan provisions that pertain to environmental sustainability, as well as the need to sustain and conserve South Africa's marine ecosystem. Also important will be the fact that the agreement contributes to global sustainable management of fisheries. And this is important because no one country is able to really address the issue of a successful sustainable management of fisheries. It requires a global effort. So by having an agreement that disciplines global fisheries subsidies, it will assist us to then ensure that we are able to conserve the marine stocks across the globe. And importantly, by conserving the marine stocks, then we are able to also ensure that the coastal communities, as well as artisanal and subsistence fishery people who are engaged in fisheries are able to sustain their livelihoods. So it's really about not only just the conservation part, but also it's about the socio-economic development part, because fisheries is also an important part of our blue oceans economy. Next slide, please. In terms of the fisheries subsidies agreement, as I said, what was concluded at MC12 is the first phase. So the agreement was approached through a phased approach because there are elements within the comprehensive fisheries disciplines that were sensitive at MC12 and could not be concluded. So what was therefore agreed is a part agreement that covers certain elements, which includes illegal, unregulated and unreported fishing, subsidies that are destined or are used in the case of overfished stocks, but also subsidies that are targeted at the high seas, which are unregulated high seas, because in the high seas, it's no man's land effectively. And there are countries as well as vessels that target the high seas because they know that there are no fisheries management systems in the high seas because it belongs to anyone. And for that reason, it was clear that if we are to effectively be able to manage and conserve the fisheries stocks and allow them to regenerate and deal with the widespread depletion of the wealthy stocks, it's important to ensure that there are also disciplines towards prohibition of any subsidies that are targeted to the high seas. The agreement provides for special and differential treatment, and this is an important principle in the WTO that ensures that countries at different levels of development take commitments that are commensurate with their capacities, for one, but also with their level of development. So if you look at the first phase of the fishery agreement, it does have provisions for special and differential treatment that address the needs of developing, including least developed countries. But it's important to note that given the context and what is covered in terms of disciplines for this phase one, what is provided for in terms of special and differential treatment are transitional periods, because no country can justify encouraging illegal, unregulated and unreported fishing. And in the case, maybe I should explain what is covered by illegal, unregulated and unreported fishing. Illegal fishing would cover fishing by vessels in contravention of the laws of the coastal state. So we can't really, as a country or countries in the WTO, be seen to be encouraging breaking of countries' laws. Unreported fishing happens when the vessels that are given permission to fish in the coastal waters of a member are therefore not reporting how much fish they have managed to catch, or they are misreporting in terms of the quantity of the fish stocks that they have been able to catch, because that data is absolutely important for coastal states to be able to manage when to close and when to open, and whether to assess whether the fish stocks is becoming depleted. Unregulated fishing happens when the vessels that are fishing are either fishing in the areas that they are not supposed to fish, because each vessel is supposed to get a permit to be able to fish. So the coastal state will therefore give the permits, and they will indicate which areas they need to fish in. Or it will be the regional fisheries management organization that will then allow, of course, under the areas within their own management, which vessels to give permits to. So it's when the vessel is therefore fishing without necessarily fishing in the areas that it is permitted to fish. So that's what we mean by unregulated. So sometimes they fish in areas where there's no conservation management systems, like the high seas. So that is also unregulated fishing. So the illegal, unregulated, unreported covers those activities which any member cannot be seen to be encouraging. So it is for that reason that we then agreed to transitional periods to ensure that developing countries and least developed countries are given an opportunity to therefore prepare their systems to be able to enforce the obligations that are arising out of the agreement. Of course, fishing in overfished stock areas cannot be encouraged, because it won't allow the fishery stock to regenerate. And then high seas, as I said, these are unregulated areas, and therefore no country should be seen to be encouraging using of subsidies to target these areas where there is no country that is taking responsibility in terms of conservation. The agreement also makes provision for a fund to provide technical assistance and capacity building to help developing and least developing countries to meet their obligations. As I said, it covers those three areas, IUU fishing. It bans support to fish in overfished stocks, and therefore subsidies that are also targeted at unregulated high seas. As I said, this is a phase one. There is a phase two. The phase two is now being negotiated, and there's one discipline. There are four disciplines when it comes to a comprehensive agreement to manage fishery subsidies. So the disciplines are IUU, overfished stocks, high seas. There's one element that could not be concluded because of the sensitivities, given the areas that are covered therein, including how support is provided to artisanal and subsistence fisheries. So that aspect, which covers overfishing and overcapacity, could not be concluded at MC12. And now we are currently, immediately, in fact, after MC12, the negotiations continued to see if we can conclude, therefore, the overfishing and overcapacity discipline. And in that regard, the work is still continuing, and the expectation is that we will conclude this at MC13. Although I must state that the positions of members are still far apart on a number of critical issues, including, as I said, special and differential treatment, support to artisanal and subsistence fisheries. Thirdly, what would be special and differential treatment that will be provided to developing countries, including LDCs. And this is contentious in the sense that you do have developing countries that are large fishing nations. And some of the developing countries are large subsidizers, such as China. Therefore, there's a contention around how do you then differentiate between developing countries, and to ensure that special and differential treatment is therefore granted to those that really need it versus those that already have built sufficient capacity. But of course, the differentiation, as members will know, is a sensitive issue in the WTO because some of the proposals that were put forward, for example, by the US, even covered South Africa in terms of countries that should not get special and differential treatment. So hence the sensitivities around how do you deal with the phase two negotiations. But as I said, there is a lot of negotiations that is taking place now in preparation for MC13 to be held in Abu Dhabi next week. Next slide, please. Therefore, the scope of the agreement covers subsidies as defined in the WTO agreement on subsidies and countervailing measures. And members would be aware that subsidies that are prohibited by the agreement on subsidies and countervailing measures are specific subsidies. And in this case, it will be specific subsidies to wild marine capture fishing and fishing-related activities that are taking place at sea. It does not cover aquaculture. It does not cover inland fisheries. It does not cover payments that are received by governments in terms of those governments that conclude government-to-government access agreements. There are, or the UN law of the seas allows a country that is not able to sufficiently leverage its waters because of either capacity issues and it has excess capacity in terms of marine resources to also conclude agreements with third parties who would then be given permits for their vessels to come and fish in the coastal members' waters. South Africa doesn't have this because, of course, we have a very good and sustainable fishing sector, and it's South Africans that really exploit the waters. Of course, the permits that are given, but the issue is that we don't have government-to-government access agreements. So this is an issue for mainly the Caribbean and the Pacific countries, and there are some African countries that have such agreements. Therefore, the agreement would include new disciplines to subsidies that are attributed to the member that is conferring the subsidy. So the subsidizing member takes responsibility regardless of where the vessel is registered or the nationality of the recipient of the subsidy, because the whole point is to discipline the subsidies. Because these are the subsidies that allow the vessels not only to exploit marine resources in their own waters, but also to engage in what is called distant water fishing, so target other countries' waters or even target the high seas. So the aim has been to discipline these fishery subsidies, because then you would be able to confine the support that allows the vessels to go far and wide effectively. I've already covered the fact that we are now busy with the phase two that relates to overcapacity and overfishing. And as I said, the plan is to see if we can conclude this work in Abu Dhabi. The MC13 is meeting from 26 to 29 February 2024. Next slide, please. Now, if we dig deep to what is covered in terms of the disciplines of the agreement, starting with the provisions that relate to illegal, unregulated, and unreported fishing. With regards to this element, as I said, there are three prohibitions. There's IUU prohibitions, there's overfish prohibition, and then there's over the high seas prohibitions. Then the fourth element is what is now being discussed under phase two. So if we start with the first prohibition, which is about prohibiting subsidies for IUU fishing, it has comprehensive transparency provisions in terms of members reporting once they discover and determine that there is IUU that is taking place in their waters, and it will be the coastal member that will make the determination. Then it will have to inform the subsidizing member, and the subsidizing member will have to take an obligation to stop providing the subsidy to any vessel or operator that is involved in IUU fishing. And this is important for the African continent in that there are studies that have been done by the EU Commission that indicate that it costs the African continent over 2.3 billion per annum in economic losses due to IUU fishing. So these vessels that come far and wide, having exploited their waters, now coming to over-exploit our own water. So it's an important issue for the continent. And once we're able to deal with these subsidies, then the direct implication would be that our coastal communities will now have more resources that they can exploit for their own economic development as well as livelihood. So as I said, the agreement provides that once a final determination or final finding has been made against the vessel or operator in terms of IUU fishing or fishing-related activities, and subject to that entity that made the determination following due processes and including notifying the member that is now engaged in IUU fishing, the subsidizing member has to stop providing the subsidy to the vessel or operator. And that will also apply to the regional management, fisheries management organizations for, of course, areas within their waters. The RFMO also makes a determination, and once a determination is made, then the member that is subsidizing will have to stop providing the subsidy. Next slide, please. Now, moving to overfished stock as well as fishing in unregulated high seas. The agreement also provides that we need to prohibit fishing or fishing-related activities that relate to overfished stocks. And the responsibility for recognizing that a stock is overfished will rest with the coastal member for areas under its jurisdiction, so within its own waters. And of course, the own waters mean the exclusive economic zone that ranges up to 200 nautical miles. And in the case of the RFMO, it will be the responsibility of the RFMO to determine that the stock is overfished, and it will be for those areas and species under the competence of the RFMO. So once that determination is made, then there's no subsidy that should be provided to fish that overfished stock, and also to fish in those areas that the RFMO or the coastal state has determined to be overfished. There are subsidies that will be allowed in the case of overfished stock. It will be only subsidies to assist to rebuild the stock, because there could be support that is provided in terms of ensuring that the stock is able to regenerate and be rebuilt to a biologically sustainable level. When it comes to the high seas, again, there's a prohibition here for any subsidies to be provided to the unregulated high seas. And then in the case where the state or status of the stock is not known, there is a provision for members to exercise due restraint so that we can first establish the state of the stock before you can provide support and subsidies. And I must state, though, that South Africa does not provide subsidies necessarily to our fishing sector. There is support that is provided, and I'm saying support under inverted commas, in that we do have a fuel rebate that we provide to the fishing sector, because anyone that buys fuel pays the fuel levies that are used for the road infrastructure and so forth. For industries that do not make use of the road infrastructure, they are able to apply for a rebate of that levy that is now imposed or part of the fuel price. So that is the only support that they get, in that they don't pay those levies that are supposed to be used for the building of the road infrastructure. However, in the agreement on subsidies and countervailing measures in the WTO, the indication is that that will be an actionable subsidies, because the definition of a subsidy is direct contribution in terms of funding to a specific sector, or it is revenue foregone to a specific sector. So the fact that we have a rebate, it is revenue foregone by the South African government, and therefore it could fall within the actionable subsidies. So as I said, that's the only support that we provide, rather than direct funding to the industry. So for all of that, this is not covered in the current context in terms of the current phase one. As I said, there are contentious issues under phase two, how that rebate is now treated in terms of fishing, including in the EEZ, and that support to the EEZ that is now being discussed under phase two. So that is where we need to now ensure that in the negotiations, as we are going to MC13, that support in terms of a fuel rebate is not caught by the disciplines under the phase two of the fisheries subsidies agreement. However, as I said, for now, under these disciplines, that issue does not arise and is not covered by the current disciplines. Next slide, please. Then, as I said, we do have notification and transparency obligations that we have also undertaken as a result of the agreement. Therefore, in addition to the regular notification of subsidies that we have under the WTO subsidies and countervailing measures, now we will be required to provide information that is relevant to the implementation of the agreement. And South Africa is already a member of a number of international instruments, including the fisheries stock agreement, including a number of regional fisheries management organizations, such as the Indian Ocean one, which deals with straddling tuna fish. So all of that already requires that we are able to notify the state of our fisheries. So South Africa, from what we can assess, including confirmation by both the Department of Justice as well as DEPO through the legal opinions that we have also sought, including an input by the Department of Environmental Affairs, Forestry and Fisheries, they all confirm that we are able to comply with the notification obligations that are currently arising out of the first phase of the fisheries agreement. And the notification information that is required includes the type of fishing activity for which a subsidy is provided, the status of the fish stock, the catch data, the fisheries management measures that are applicable, but also information on vessels that are benefiting from subsidies. And in the case of IUU, if we have made a determination on vessels or operators that are engaged in IUU fishing, that will also need to be notified to the WTO. Next slide, please. The agreement, like any trade agreement, also contains provisions on dispute settlement. So if we are not applying and implementing our obligations under the agreement, then we'll be brought into the dispute settlement system of the WTO. Members are also aware that currently the dispute settlement system is dysfunctional, because the appeal layer of the WTO dispute settlement system is now not functional, because the US has not agreed to the appointment of the appellate body members. But of course, the first phase in terms of the panel and hearing of those disputes is still applicable. So if we are not adhering to our obligations under the agreement, of course, once it comes into force, then we would be brought into the WTO. But as I said, South Africa currently does not provide any fisheries subsidies that would be caught by this agreement. Next slide, please. Then why the need to ratify? As the chair indicated in his opening remarks, the agreement will come into force once two-thirds of the membership has submitted their instruments of ratification. So that would take us to 110 ratifications. To date, and the number has now slightly changed given the rush and the push to have an outcome at MC13. Currently, the number of countries that have ratified is standing at 70. So clearly, chances of the agreement coming into force at MC13, I think it's a bit of a stretch. It's unlikely. But of course, given the fact that we are already sitting at 70 countries that have ratified, there's a good chance that immediately after MC13, the agreement will come into force. Of course, also important is that, as I said, if you look at the first phase of the agreement, it covers really issues that South Africa is also committed to curbing. IUU fishing, fishing in overfished stock, as well as high seas. So it's really important for South Africa to ratify from a reputational point of view, but also from a moral point of view, because we cannot be seen to support subsidies that really involves, activities such as IUU fishing and fishing of overfished stocks, as well as fishing in the unregulated high seas. We are a responsible fishing nation, and therefore, as I said, for any agreement, especially when you are talking about global fish stocks, given that you have migratory species as well, even if we have the best conservation management systems as South Africa, it will not be effective unless there is a global instrument that really incentivizes all countries that are engaged in fishing to really observe their conservation management mechanisms. So it's important to therefore have an instrument that disciplines the key tool that leads to overfishing and overcapacity, which is, of course, the subsidies. And research is there to indicate that the biggest contributor to overfishing and depletion of fish stocks globally is subsidies. Therefore, it's important that we therefore play our part as South Africa. And of course, it's also it also makes economic sense to also address the issues of subsidies so that we are able to have an effective mechanism to deal with the conservation of our marine resources and disciplines, especially those vessels that come far and wide supported by these subsidies to target our own waters. It's also important for the livelihoods of the coastal communities. Next slide, please. In terms of the implementation plan, as I said, we are already a member to international agreements that already include disciplines to combat, especially IUU fishing, such as the Port State Measures Agreement. We also part of regional fisheries management bodies, such as the Indian Ocean One, as I said, that deals with tuna fish. So it's important, and we already have, as I said, obligations that are similar to what is now covered under the Phase One. Because of that, there is no specific implementation plan that is required for South Africa to implement the Phase One, because already we are fully compliant with the obligations that we have under these various instruments. And as I said, the legal opinions, both from DECO as well as the Department of Justice and Constitutional Development, confirm this. Therefore, there's really no cumbersome implementation plan that will be required other than to continue to do what we have been doing effectively. So also important is that even our domestic law in terms of the Marine Living Resources Act renders South African law in compliance with the Fisheries Subsidies Agreement. And this is also confirmed by the Office of the State Law Advisor's legal opinion. But what they have also indicated in their opinion is that for South Africa, even though we are compliant there's a need to ensure that the agreement is ratified in terms of Article 2312 of the Constitution, because it is, after all, an international legal instrument. And then once ratified, it will be deposited with the WTO. Next slide, please. In terms of financial implications and risk mitigation, again, linked to the fact that we are already compliant and are implementing similar provisions, so there are no financial implications that are foreseen in terms of the implementation of this, because there are no new systems that will be required to be put in place, because, as I said, we already are implementing the obligations, both in terms of our own national law, but also in terms of obligations that are arising from existing international instruments that we are party to. There's a risk, though, if we are not implementing the agreement and are not ratifying. One, we will risk losing credibility as a negotiating partner, because South Africa was quite central in the conclusion of the Fish One in the WTO at MC12. But also, as I said, as a responsible fishing nation, it will be quite odd for South Africa not to be seen to be party to a global consensus on the need to deal with fishery subsidies that contribute to the depletion of the fish stocks. As a fishing nation, we have a keen interest, both from a moral but also socio-economic point of view, to ensure conservation of our marine resources, because it will also assist in us ensuring that we're able to drive the blue oceans economy. And also, we need to ensure that our own sector is protected against subsidies that enable vessels to come from elsewhere to fish in our own EEZ, because it's these subsidies that allow these vessels and operators to go to areas beyond their own national waters. So for us to be able to also, as a defense measure, to deal with this exploitation from those vessels or operators that are coming from elsewhere, it's important to have an instrument that will cap the very subsidies that fuel the issue of overexploitation of our own resources. And the issue here is that increasingly, of course, we also see globally attention being paid to environmental measures, including countries unilaterally, as well as a protectionist measure, implementing regulations in the context of the environment. So it will not be surprising in future that countries or regions such as the EU, who are very strong on implementing environmental measures, would only open in terms of market access for fisheries products to only those countries that are signatories to an international agreement that ensures compliance with conservation measures, including curbing these subsidies. So also, as a risk mitigation measure, it's important to ensure to protect our interests in terms of market access to these countries. It's important to ensure that we are part of this agreement before they take such decisions. And we can see a number of measures that are implemented and regulations implemented by the EU in the context of the environment and the proliferation of these measures, that it is not unthinkable that they could also look into such measures. So as I say, it makes economic sense, but also it makes you know, a moral sense to be part of the process. So as I said, ratifying the instrument will therefore contribute to mitigate the risks. Next slide, please. Then the benefits to vulnerable groups and the broader society. As I said, you have a number of these vessels that come far and wide, supported by the subsidies that come and deplete our waters. So this to ensure that we're able to assist the interests of coastal communities, as well as small-scale and artisanal fisheries in terms of protecting their own livelihoods. I've already spoken to the need to ensure that you have a global tool to deal with what contributes to the depletion of fishery stocks. So it is in that regard that we believe that this is not only making sense from a global blue oceans economy perspective, but also about addressing the interests of our coastal communities. Next slide, please. Now, in terms of consultations, next slide. In terms of consultations, we have consulted with the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries, but also we have consulted with industry, we have consulted with the Department of Transport, and I must also actually say that the Department of Forestry, Fisheries and Environment has been actively participating in the actual negotiations, and both under phase one, including under phase two, because as South Africa, we needed to ensure that as we engage in these sensitive negotiations, because it's the first time that environmental issues are brought into the WTO. So we needed to make sure that our interests are protected and therefore ensure that the negotiating team is not only from the DTIC perspective, but also from DFFE perspective. And as we go to phase two, it's important, especially given the fact that now some of the discussions are on the sensitive issues that also include how support will be provided to artisanal and subsistence fisheries, that DEF is therefore part of that process. So, and of course, we'll need to ensure that the necessary carve-outs that we require from the agreement are therefore granted when it comes to artisanal and coastal community issues, but also a carve out to ensure that the rebate that I spoke to, the fuel rebate, is also not caught by the disciplines that it renders. The limited support that we are providing to the fisheries sector to be difficult to provide in future. So all of those sensitivities are now being addressed under the phase two, and those negotiations, as I said, are continuing. We also consulted with the industry and labor, both in the context of NEDLAF, but also directly, including both SASTIA, as well as the small scale and artisanal fisheries. So that is the end of the presentation, Chair. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Ambassador, for the presentation. I will now open the platform to honorable members. If there are any questions of clarity, honorable members. Looks like the presentation was clear. Oh, honorable Boshoff.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to everybody. Sorry for not switching on my video, but we are in load shedding as we speak. Thank you very much to the presenter, to the ambassador, comprehensive presentation. I'd just like some clarity on the following. What fines are implemented to eradicate the possibility of the plundering of our stock on our coastline? And how do we monitor our coastline to see that people without the relevant permission or licenses or subsidies or whatever are not encroaching on our coastline to do illegal fishing? And then those unregulated fishing vessels or operators that report incorrectly or do not report at all, how are you going to address this issue, and what solution is there to ensure that they report correctly. Then I'd also like to know from you, Ambassador, are you of the opinion that South Africa is in a position to implement this agreement effectively? And then speaking on the MC13, could you give me an indication as to what you and your department or what shall I call it, people are looking towards with regard to outcomes? And would you think that this agreement could be seen as foolproof? If not, what could be seen as a solution to make it foolproof? And then I would also like to know from you, how do you implement, or South African government implement, the Marine Living Resources Act in respect of illegal activities by an operator or vessels? And then the unregulated high seas, the fishing that takes place there. This is where this is my opinion, feel the problem lies, and I would like to see that this is addressed at the MC13 to see how regulations can be put in place with regard to the unregulated high seas. And could you possibly give us an indication on how many operators have applied for the fuel rebate? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Honorable Pashoff. Honorable Ambassador Dango, got two ambassadors here.
Yeah, thank you very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, I have a very simple question. Are we dealing with the detail of the this particular agreement, or are we dealing with the ratification thereof? If we're going to go into the details, then we're looking at the detail of the agreement, but if we're going for ratification, then I think we should consider that. Thank you very much.
No, I think still we can do both clarities in general as well. I think the ambassador is capable of clarifying these issues because she was part of the negotiations as well when she was based in Switzerland. So I think there's nothing wrong in terms of general clarifications as well on these issues. But then after that, we will deal with the ratification. Are there any other hands, honourable members? If not, I'll allow Ambassador Peter to respond to questions of honourable Pashoff.
Thank you very much, honourable Chair, and thank you very much, honourable Pashoff, for the questions. In terms of fines to those who are not complying with our own laws, that is not regulated by the WTO, but is regulated by our own domestic laws. So, of course, once our authorities find that there is a vessel that is fishing in our waters illegally, either they take the permit or they issue a fine. So that is a sovereign right of a member in terms of its own domestic laws. In terms of the UN Law of the Seas Treaty, we reserve a sovereign right to regulate what is within our waters. We were also very careful as South Africa to ensure that as we engage in this negotiation, we still preserve the right of coastal states to be responsible for their own resources, but also preserve the right of coastal states to have a full right to their own marine resources. So the WTO agreement, therefore, does not interfere with our sovereign right to manage our own waters. And that was an important sovereignty issue. And I think all members across the board share that need to preserve our own sovereignty within our own waters. which is why there's a sensitivity with the overcapacity and overfishing, because now it touches on what you do within your own waters and how you support your coastal communities. That's why we could not conclude at MC12 and why it still remains a sensitive issue. So the fines are regulated in terms of the Marine Resources Act, and they will continue to be imposed in terms of what is provided for in terms of our own domestic law. Then in terms of monitoring our coast, of course, we do have the agencies that are under the Department of Environmental, I still call it Environmental Affairs, Forestry, Fisheries and Environment, that are responsible for that. So, of course, they have the requisite capacity. In fact, there is a study that was issued not long ago that indicates that actually South Africa is amongst the best countries in terms of conservation of its own waters. So that will continue, and which is why, given the reputation of a fishing nation that we are, but also a fishing nation that has the right systems in terms of conservation of its own waters, it's important that we are not outside of a global consensus about how we can further enhance what we do nationally through a global instrument. Maybe just to also again emphasize, this agreement is specific only to subsidies, because we were also careful that the WTO is not a fisheries management institution. It does not have the mandate nor the capacity to deal with conservation issues. So those issues are left to the coastal state, and they are left to the right organizations, international organizations such as the FAO, that deal with issues that relate to conservation. Where WTO comes in is in terms of fisheries subsidies. So the agreement is really targeted at what is it that we need to do to deal with fisheries subsidies. Of course, in terms of conservation of marine resources, it requires marine conservation measures. It requires disciplines on subsidies. It requires building capacity by the coastal state to ensure that it has the right agencies to monitor its waters. It has the right technologies. So all of that is granted. However, WTO has a particular and specific role, which is the fisheries subsidies. So that is why you will see that the agreement is about disciplining fisheries subsidies that are targeted to illegal, unregulated and unreported fishing, overfished stocks, as well as the high seas. So we've already covered actually the high seas under the first phase of the fisheries agreement. So that is already dealt with. The only one that we are now busy with is overcapacity and overfishing, including how we deal with subsidies within your own waters, so that we again are able to enforce and address fishery subsidies that lead to over-exploitation of marine resources. Then in terms of how do we address IUU, again, our authorities are supposed to look at those vessels and operators in terms of their own monitoring activities. And again, it was important to preserve the sovereignty of the country, which is why you will see, and this was a contested issue in the WTO, as to who determines that IUU has taken place in your own waters. And it was clear that you can only get consensus by saying it will be the coastal state that will then determine whether there is a vessel or operator that is involved in IUU, because you look at whether they have contravened your own domestic law. So it's only you as a member that can say there's someone who's contravening my laws. And of course, in terms of the Marine Resources Act, then you will, according to the Act, either impose a fine or take away the permit. Unreported, you can see whether they are reporting once they are in the waters. And we do have surveillance systems in South Africa to look at what is happening within our waters. So our authorities and coastal guards are able to determine these things. So there is a register for companies and operators that are involved in IUU fishing. So, of course, once we, based on that register and the monitoring and the surveillance by our authorities, we discover that there is IUU fishing, then we also, the vessel is supposed to fly a flag. So either it flies the flag of the coastal state or it flies the flag of another country. So whoever the flag, the vessel belongs to, will then be informed by South Africa to say, we have found that your vessel is involved in IUU fishing, and therefore you must stop providing any subsidies that you are providing to that vessel. In that way, it will be very difficult for that vessel to continue its operation, and therefore, in terms of, again, that member's laws, they will then fine or ensure that that vessel is not given the necessary permits. In terms of whether the MC13 outcomes will be foolproof, I think an international agreement assists somewhat, but it will not be foolproof because you will see now, even as we are looking at the phase two issues, effectively SDG 14.6 says you must prohibit subsidies. And you must eliminate those subsidies that contribute to IUU, to overfishing, to overcapacity. Now there is a contestation because, as I said, you have vessels and operators from specific members that have already overfished their waters. And they want to access those waters of countries that still have marine resources. And this is the case for countries in Asia that, of course, use or eat a lot of fish in terms of their diet, European countries that also eat a lot of fish in terms of their diet. So these countries are looking to fish elsewhere. So now the contestation is how do you discipline the subsidies, but at the same time ensure that international trade takes place? So sometimes these things are not. Is now an innovation, also have some loopholes, but this comes under the second phase, in that there is what is now called a hybrid approach, where you allow subsidization to continue, which means keep the status quo, as long as a country that is providing a subsidy can prove that it has fishery management measures that it is implementing to keep the fish stock in the biologically sustainable level. And of course, we know that all countries across the world that are fishing nations have fishery management programs. However, according to the FAO, those fisheries management programs are not necessarily assisting to deal with overfishing because, of course, the subsidies are one of the issues that has not been addressed.
Recording in progress.
A tool that still attempts to address the issue of subsidization when it comes to overcapacity and overfishing. I think I've covered, Chair, all the issues. In terms of how many operators have applied for the fuel rebate, I'll need to check on that. I don't have the stats. They normally apply through National Treasury and the Department of Environment, Forestry and Fisheries. So I don't have that data readily available. But I would assume that all our operators, because this is the only benefit that they get, all our operators will probably apply for that fuel rebate. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Ambassador. I don't know if there are any follow-up questions. If not, then I will ask the committee secretary to put up the report, the committee report on the ratification of the agreement on fishery subsidies.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon to everyone.
Yes.
The report of the Select Committee on Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment and Labour on the World Trade Organization Agreement on Fisheries Subsidies Agreement dated 20th February 2024. Read as follows. The fishery industry worldwide is undergoing global governance reform. In the main is to meet United Nations Sustainability Development Goal 14.6, which provides that certain forms of fisheries subsidies which contribute to overcapacity and overfishing should be prohibited and subsidies that contribute to the illegal, unreported and unregulated fishing should be eliminated. Further, the National Development Plan advances for the environmental sustainability, in particular sustaining South Africa's marine ecosystem. The Select Committee on Trade and Industry, Economic Development, Small Business Development, Tourism, Employment and Labour, having considered the request for approval by Parliament on the World Trade Organization's Agreement on Fisheries Subsidies, recommends that the House approves the agreement in terms of Section 231(2) of the Constitution. Report to be considered. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you so much. Honourable members, we will now vote. And I will request that those who are voting in favour of the request to recommend to the House for the approval of the ratification. Please raise your hands.
Sebastian, can we note, Honourable Mshodi, I vote in favour.
Thank you so much, Honourable Mshodi. Okay, thanks.
I see Mr. Dango, Mr. Moimang, Ms. Mamaragane, Ms. Moshodi, and yourself, Chair. 1, 2, 3, 4.
You can do, Mr. Lund.
An honourable Mr. Lund.
Mr. Lund. Oh, and
Honourable Bosho. Yeah. Honourable
Bosho as well. Okay. That's all, Mr. Lund. Dango, Mr. Mamaragane, Chairperson, Mr. Lund, and Ms. Bosho.
How many?
Mr. Moimang is not here. All right. Okay.
Give us the number.
Chairperson,
voted in favor.
Members voted in favor from the following provinces. The first one is Mr. Dango from Gauteng, Mr. Moimang from the Northern Cape, Ms. Mamaragane from Limpopo, Honorable Khai from the Eastern Cape, Mr. Lund from Western Cape, and Mrs. Boshoff from Mpumalanga. We have 1, 2, 3, 4.
Honorable Mshodi from the Free State.
Oh, Honorable Mshodi
from Free State.
Yes.
From Free State. There
are 7 altogether.
So we have 2, 4, 6. 7
province.
Yes,
Chair. All right. Thank you very much. Can honourable members please lower your hands? Those who are voting against. Can you honourable members please lower your hands? Those who are voting in favour, honourable Lund. If you can please lower your hand. Okay. Those who are voting against, please Raise your hand. Honorable Committee Secretary.
There are no members voting in. There are no members voting against the treaty, Chair.
Members who are abstaining?
There are no members abstaining from the treaty, from voting.
All right. Thank you very much. That therefore means that the committee recommends to the House for the approval of the ratification on WTO fisheries subsidies agreement. In terms of the process, this then will be 80 seats. After being 80 seats, the programming committee will then program it so that it's tabled in the House for adoption by the NCOP plenary session. So that is going to be the process. Thank you very much, honorable members, for considering this agreement. And also thanks to Ambassador Pitcher for presenting for the presentation, and also the rest of the official from the department. You are now, Ambassador Pitcher and your delegation released. The committee will just deal with the internal committee matters. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Honorable members, there are two issues yesterday we had the management committee in preparation for these two meetings. One is the letter that came from the chairperson of the portfolio committee of economic development. I would suggest that committee secretary, if you can please flight or put up the letter. And then the other one is it's coming, I think, from the Department of Small Business Development or it's an agency. There's an invitation for members to attend the, I think it's a GEC, but also the letter will be flighted. We need to confirm attendance. The conference will be here. I mean, it's like what I'm saying here, but the conference will be in Cape Town. Oh, you're starting with this one. It's a Global Entrepreneurship Congress plus Africa on the 13th to 14th March. The 13th is on Wednesday and the 14th is on Thursday, honorable members. My understanding is that there are no committee meetings on Wednesday. When I checked with Supeka, there was no meeting scheduled. That would therefore mean the 13 is open. And then the 14 members will have to also make requests from their parties, because on Thursday it's usually caucus day, but the last time I checked, maybe committee secretary will assist in checking their program. For March the 13th and 14th. The last time I checked, there was no plenary on the 14th, but I understand that last week on Thursday there was a programming committee meeting. Perhaps the situation could have changed now. Maybe there could be now plenary sessions on those dates. I'm not sure, but last time I checked, there was nothing. So I haven't checked the program after Thursday for the adoption. So I thought we were going to start with the other one. Maybe whilst you're checking, can we put up the Western Cape one first? Whilst we're checking their program, if it's going to be fine for us to attend that Global Enterprise Congress plus Africa.
Are you flighting the Western Cape letter? Enrico.
Going to Narcissus Kreis.
Okay, thanks.
Okay, maybe whilst we are still I'll just talk to it, honourable members. We receive it whilst we're in the plenary session, the joint plenary session on the debate on the State of the Nation address. I ask the committee secretary to write to the chairperson of the portfolio committee acknowledging the receipt, and that the matter would be referred to the committee. What is being requested by the portfolio committee chair is that they be allowed to have, maybe if you can read it out.
The letter is addressed to the chairperson, Honorable Khai. Dear Honorable Khai, Standing Committee from the Standing Committee on Finance, Economic Opportunities and Tourism requests for extension of National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill. This correspondence is written in my capacity as the chairperson of the Western Cape Provincial Parliament Standing Committee on Finance, Economic Opportunities and Tourism. The Western Cape Provincial Parliament's Standing Committee on Finance, Economic Opportunities and Tourism notes the following for the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill. Number one, the negotiating mandate is due by 6 March 2024. The final mandate is due by 26 March 2024. The Standing Committee will hold its briefing on the bill on the 21st February 2024 and will resolve on the way forward for the bill. This includes discussions on advertising and calls for comments on the bill. The committee is concerned that this short timeline does not leave adequate time for the submission of comments from the public. We also require time to deliberate on the submission received, which will speak to the negotiating mandates. The Western Cape Provincial Parliament Standing Committee therefore kindly requests an extension to submit the negotiating mandate so we may advertise adequately and draft the negotiating mandates. We would need until 19 March 2024 at least. We hope that you will consider our request favorable. We look forward to your response. Yours sincerely, Ms. C.A.T. Marais, the chairperson of the Standing Committee on Finance, Economic Opportunities and Tourism. Thank you, Chair.
Or maybe you can put it on. Don't take it out. Honorable members, as it is indicated that in our last meeting when we adopted the program, as it is correctly put up there by the chairperson of the Standing Committee, on the 6th, we were supposed to have the negotiating mandate. We were suggesting that we move that negotiating mandate to give opportunity to the Western Cape Standing Committee on Finance, Economic Opportunities and Tourism to conduct all these matters that they referring to, and then we move the negotiating mandate to the 19th of March, but then we continue with the final mandates on the 26th of March. This is also influenced by the fact that post the 26th of March will be the last committee meeting that we will have as this committee, because the following week will be the start of the constituency period. We were informed that there is no clarity as to whether we will be back after that constituent period, which starts, I think, on the 2nd of April. which will be the following week after the 26th of March. There's no clarity as whether we'll come back at all to continue with the sixth term, or that will be that week of the 26th will be our last week until the election. So there's no clarity. So and therefore that's why we said we can be flexible around the issue of the negotiating mandate, move it to the 19th. We receive the negotiating mandates on the 19th, and then the final mandates on the 26th, so that we allow the Western Cape Standing Committee to deal with all these other issues that they're referring to, including the to draft their negotiating mandate, because they request that they will need until the 19th of March 2024. So that's what we are proposing, and if we agree, then it will mean we need to quickly then write to the chairperson of the NCOP about that, so that it's this request also goes to the chairperson, and then we inform the standing committee, as they indicate that tomorrow they are having their meeting to decide on the way forward. So it will be better if when they decide on the way forward, they also receive this evening the letter, so that they can also consider it when they deal with their way forward with regard to this particular bill. Any comments? You can take it off now. Honorable Dango?
Person, I think we should accede to the request for the 19th of March and to complete by the 26th, as agreed by the Managing Committee yesterday. I so move, Chairperson.
Thank you very much. Any other contrary view? I take it that we then agree that we
Chairperson.
Get to the request. Honorable Masori?
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. I second the proposal that was made by Honorable Dango to say we must give them extension until the 19th. And the final mandate will be on the 26th. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson.
Thank you so much. Any contrary view? No contrary view. So we agree. We request the administration then to write a letter that will be signed by the chairperson of the committee to the chairperson of the standing committee. Thank you very much, honorable members. Can we then go back to the issue of the invitation? If we can put up that letter again, but I hope that we now whether there will be plenary session on that particular day, and also maybe Honorable Moiman can indicate if there will be a meeting. The last time I checked with Shopeka, said there was no meeting scheduled for the 13th. I don't know if there has been any change since then. Is there anyone who can quickly check?
Let me come back to you. Let me come back to you later. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, maybe we should not take a decision now. Let's wait for the chair and also get maybe also responses from members individually if they will be available. Maybe they can communicate that to Sis Grace, their availability. So that then whoever is organized. I don't know if we have not passed the deadline. Can you?
Can you go further down and record?
I think, wasn't it the 14th, the deadline?
Chair, all the members were written an individual letters, emailed it to them. I forwarded it to them. So they were supposed to respond to me or to them. To the department using the link. The link is www.gecafrica.co.
All right. Maybe let's first establish whether
you were supposed to This was supposed to be received before the 16th of February, but I can talk to them about that.
All right. Let's first establish if there are no competing activities on those particular days. Once we establish that, then members will indicate their availability.
There is also another invitation, Chair, from the Department of Tourism.
Okay.
Also forwarded it to members.
Yeah, yes, remember members. Told me about it yesterday. But
can you flight it?
Sorry, Chair, before we go over to the tourism one,
yes.
Could we just get an indication of when we will have to look out for announcing that we would be attending or not attending the Africa Convention?
Okay.
Please.
Okay, I will just check with the program now, and then check also with the Honorable Moy Monk if there's any committee meeting that period, and then this evening we will be able to indicate, and then members can then individually then indicate to Sis Grace if they are attending while she's also negotiating for the deadline be extended. Is that fine, another person?
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much. Okay. Can you scroll down, Mr. Pazier? Can you read it? Because, sorry, it's the first time. There are so many things.
This is from the South African Tourism Invitation Meetings Africa 2024. I hereby invite members of the FLEG Committee to Meetings Africa 2024. South African Tourism in partnership with its paid partners, South African Tourism Authority, Johannesburg Tourism Company and Sandton Convention Center will be hosting the 18th edition of Meetings Africa, Africa's premier business events trade show, taking place at the Sandton Convention Center. Meetings Africa is a showcase of the African continent's business events, products, and experiences. Meetings Africa 2024 will take place under the theme Africa's Success Built on Quality Connections, which encapsulates the essence of the show, which creates a platform for collaboration to contribute to the continent's success. The theme also serves to create a platform for knowledge sharing, which will result in unlocking opportunities for the continent. The trade show is scheduled to take place on the 27th and 28th of February and will be preceded by Business Networking Opportunity Day, Bond Day, on the 26th of February 2024. Can you move, please? The proposed, I have identified below events of your consideration and participation. The date 26th February, this is the program until the 28th of February. Chair?
Yeah, no, it's not that it's the first time I say this, but already I know that it blesses with the activities of the 27th. We will be receiving the responses of the Minister of Trade, Industry and Competition on the Companies Amendment. I don't know if maybe we could, those will be available, could maybe have their names. Maybe they could attend on the 26th, which will be Monday, and then on the 27th from 8 to 10. Maybe they don't attend the exhibition and join the ex- I don't know when, because also there's a plenary in the afternoon on the, maybe continue until 10 on the 27th, and again, join again, the official will come on the 18th to 22 hours. I don't know, the 28th. I don't, maybe members should just indicate also to Sister Grace there on their availability to attend this. Maybe they could join while they are there, the meetings or the committee meetings on that particular day. It will be up to the members to join, but the sooner they do it so that necessary arrangement can be made, the political approval and the financial approvals and all those, yeah. If members will be available, can indicate to Mrs. Grace. Can we leave it at that, honorable members?
Chair, it's Honorable Bossoff. If I can indicate right now to Sis Grace that it's impossible for me to attend, I've already got planned activities for Monday the 26th.
Okay.
Thank you.
Because I was thinking that you are the person who was responsible for tourism in terms of the sharing of load within the party. So now that you are not available, yeah. Yeah, members then indicate.
We also have 3 sets of minutes, Chair.
No, let's defer them. I think it's too much for members. We had them the whole day today.
Chairperson, just to indicate that there was a note from the Chief Work about the plan, the 27th.
Yeah, that it will be virtual.
Yeah, and no. That one will be fully virtual. But WIPs are supposed to be there physically.
Oh, okay. I didn't see that, but maybe then it was sent to the WIPs directly. So that one, that says it's fully virtual, so there's no need to go to Cape Town next week. I saw that message. I didn't see the other one. Okay. No, that's fine then. Honorable members, I think
can I report back on the meeting of tomorrow at 1600?
Oh, yes.
Oh, this Mr. Protasat sent, Chair.
Oh, okay. Honorable Protasat?
Thank you, Chairperson. Just want to let you know that I'm unfortunately attending SOPA, or the King's Address. Well, we have the full plenary, also the King's Address on the 27th, and then SOPA on the 28th. So I unfortunately won't be able to attend. Thank you.
Okay, no, that's fine. I think maybe we should write back to the department and inform them, unfortunately, because of other activities, parliamentary activities, as well as the provincial activities, provincial legislature activities, were unable to attend. Because also myself, I won't be able to attend, unfortunately. Tomorrow, Honourable Members, there's a committee meeting chaired by Honorable Moy Monk. And then after that, then we will have a... Can you indicate that tomorrow at 4, Sis Grace? Can you remind us?
Yes, Chairperson, we will be having a public hearing tomorrow for the bill of the Department of Small Business Development. And so far, we received like 4 submissions.
Come again? We received?
So far, we received 4 submissions. Can you hear me, Chair?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. There's only one stakeholder that indicated that they will be presenting in a committee meeting, the South African Insurance Association indicated that they won't be able to participate, to give oral submissions. The Durban Chamber submitted their submission while I was in the meeting. Now, I forwarded it to Enrico. The provincial minister of the Western Cape, Ministry of Finance and Economic Opportunities in the Western Cape, they have not indicated, they submitted their submission, but they have not indicated that they will be presenting tomorrow. The other one, which is the Orateng 5 from Resbank, they said they will submit their submission today later, but they won't be presenting it. So it leaves us, if the Minister of the Western Cape does not come back to us to say he will be presenting tomorrow, it leaves us with one stakeholder to present tomorrow, which is Letumile Makobe, the founder of Women's Entrepreneurs in Pretoria. But the program here will be forwarded this afternoon with the link.
Sorry, can I just check what time, do you know what time, I'm not sure if the chair is here, Chair Moima. What time does the committee meeting start tomorrow?
9:30, Chair.
Half past nine.
Yes, Chair, it's half past nine, as Honorable Bashoff has indicated.
Yeah.
And usually by one, we are done.
Yeah, because I was thinking, whether does it make sense to wait for 4 o'clock, given that also tomorrow is a budget day, some members may be interested on that. Why immediately after the committee meeting tomorrow, and then we convene the Select Committee on Trade, and then we consider the briefing by the stakeholder concerned, and we ask questions for clarity on his or her submission, and then we then done, and then the following period, we then get the responses from the Department of Small Business and Development to reply on the oral submissions as well as the written submissions.
Which following date?
Is that fine? If it's fine, Honorable Members, can we then, Sis Grace, notify the department that they should be here, say, by 12, and also the stakeholder concern?
Okay, I will speak with the stakeholder first.
Yes.
Before I conduct them. Okay, sure.
That's fine. So if we agree, Honorable Members, I think that's how we should then deal with the situation, because to wait for one stakeholder at 4, yeah. Otherwise, if there were more than one, then we could do that. But you
said we can start at 12 o'clock.
We can start at 12, yes, possible, and convert the meeting tomorrow after the transport, the Select Committee on Transport is done with its work. We immediately convene this one and then continue with listening to the stakeholder. And then we ask questions for clarity. Yeah. Thank you very much. If there's nothing else, Honorable Members, from your side, I would want to thank you very much for making time to attend these afternoon meetings, as well as your contribution and your participation. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much.